Go behind me. You can come closer. So really, there's two different schmoozes that I wanted to give tonight. Both of them, I couldn't decide which one to give. One is unbelievable stories having to do with last week in Meron that came out this week. One of them is a continuation of the story that Adam Schreiber put in a WhatsApp that sent out. I decided that part of the schmooze I'm going to say upstairs over the food. A couple of unbelievable stories. And I'm going to give the other schmooze that I want to give right now. So there's a shiur that's given every week. Actually, right now, it's still going on. It's in, I'm very curious what he's saying. It's of Shlomo Levinson gives in Bnei Brak every week. And when you come Shana Bet, Amit Hashem, we go on the Bnei Brak Shabbaton, you'll probably get to meet him. So one of the things that he does in his shiur is that people from all around the world fax him and email him Divrei Torah from Mexico, America, Canada, England, Israel. People send Divrei Torah in the Parsha. He makes a booklet out of everybody's Divrei Torah. And then he says over different things and throws in some of his own ideas and mashals and stories to connect what everybody's saying. And it's really nice. It brings, you know, Klal Yisrael together. So my son listens to this every single week, Benny. And we decide, okay, you know what, this week we're going to write something and we're going to send it in. I still have to hear the shiur to see if he said it. But it was a reaction to something that he had said a few weeks ago. So a few weeks ago, Shlomo Levinson asked the following question. Was it raining at the time of Matan Torah? Was it raining at Ma'amad Har Sinai? Yeah. You think, I asked you to prove it.
Yeah, there's
thunder. Yeah, why? Because what?
Lightning and thunder.
Doesn't mean rain. So every time there's lightning and thunder, there's always rain? What? Doesn't say in the Pesukim. So, Pasha, you didn't chazer Sefer Shoftim. In Shiras Devora, I also didn't. In Shiras Devora, it's in the Parakeh and Sefer Shoftim. She's talking about, in the beginning of her shira, she's referring to Matan Torah. She's describing it, and she says, Eretz Ra'asha, the ground shook, Gam Shamayim Natafu, and the heavens dripped, Gam Avim Natfu Mayim, and the clouds dripped forth water at the time of Matan Torah. And Yonatan ben Uzziah says on the side, Ananya Negidu Mitra, the Ananim gave forth rain at the time of Matan Torah. And then he brought up another pasuk in Tehillim. One of the things that we sent in is it's actually a mefurish midrash. There's a midrash rabbah that says that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah with three things, with Eish, with Mayim, and in the Midbar. And then it brings a pasuk for each one of them. In the pesukim for water, it actually brings the pesukim that he brought in the shiur from Sefer Shoftim, that Matan Torah came along with rain. And there's a significance to that. There's a message that's meant to be taken from that. The Midrash says over there, just like all one of these things, all these are hefker, water is hefker, everybody that wants to take it, a desert is hefker, nobody owns a desert, fire is hefker. So too, Torah is hefker, and it's open and available for anybody that wants to learn it. You take out from it what it is that you put in, and it's open and available for everybody. But then he asked a very interesting question. He asked, this is what we responded to. He asked, did they get wet? Did the Jewish people get wet from the rain at Matan Torah when it was pouring? He said that. I didn't like that answer at all. They were under the mountain when he said, Nasa v'nishma kafalem harkagigis. But who says that it stayed over them the entire time? So what we wrote back is that this reminded me about a story of Rav Shach. Then I'm going to give you a whole chain of stories that connect to the same idea. Rav Shach was very... All the Gedolim are like this. And Rav Shach, there's a lot of stories about this too. They were literally obsessed and addicted to Torah learning. They loved it. They couldn't stop thinking about it. They were so completely absorbed in it that nothing else existed around them when they were learning. One time, he was a Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich. One time, the Bachram saw him walking to Yeshiva. It was pouring rain outside. And he was walking outside, holding an umbrella in his hand, holding it up, but the umbrella was closed. and he was walking, and you could see he's like thinking and learning, and his hat and his clothes are sopping, dripping wet, and he's completely oblivious to the whole thing. He's walking to yeshiva, holding a closed umbrella the entire way all to the yeshiva. So he said, if Rav Shach in our generation is holding on a level that his love and connection to Torah is one that would not make him realize or even notice how wet that he's getting, it's completely irrelevant whether Kleistar got wet or not. They would not remember it. They would not have paid attention to it. They would not have thought about it. They were completely in a different realm altogether. Rav Shach also one time came to yeshiva, and they saw he's holding a little girl in his hand. And they asked him, who's that? He's like, who? What? Who's that little girl? He's like, oh no! She asked me to cross the street like 15 minutes ago. he never let go of her hand. He was still thinking and learning. His wife tells a story that one time he came home of Shach and he was like this. She said, so weird. She didn't say weird, but she said, well, Rosh Hashiva, what's that? What are you doing? He's like, what? He's like this. He had gone shopping. He bought a watermelon. And I guess apparently while he was walking home, it must have fallen out. He completely didn't notice, didn't pay attention, and he kept on going home just like that. There was a bunch of people that saw, a few people had saw this story, because it happened a few times, that while he was walking to yeshiva, he would walk into an electricity pole. It happens when you're walking, you're not looking where you're going. He would say, aslicha, 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 and he would keep on walking. He didn't even know what it was that he bumped into and what it was that happened. I remember Rav Pass, one of the people that we sometimes bring the guys to. Rav Pass is a son-in-law of the son-in-law of Rav Shach. So he had a kesha with Rav Shach, and he had a chavrusa with him, I think, once a week. And he said, one of the things that stands out so strongly in my head from the chavrusa is that right after a chavrusa, he always had a kabbalas kail. There was like a line of people waiting to meet him. It was the time that he would sit and meet people. And very often, there'd be very important people waiting outside to talk to him. Members of the Knesset, Rashi Yeshivas, Gedola, tons of people waiting. Rav Shach was the leader of the Jewish people at the time. Everybody's waiting outside to meet with him. And he said, every day when we would finish a chavrusa, and it was time for him to start to meet with people, the pain that you saw on his face when he had to look up from the Gemara and start to meet with people, that he had to stop learning and disconnect. It looked like you know, I don't know if you saw when we were taking the splinter out of Jason's finger today, but it was 20 times worse than the pain that you saw on Jason's face when we took out the splinter, like agony of having to stop learning the Gemara right now to meet with these important people, because of the attachment and the connection. The obsession that he had with the Torah that he was learning. There's a famous story. This maybe somebody told you, tell me to stop and I'll switch to a different story. But the family members of Rav Shach said they don't remember a night that Rav Shach went through the night and slept through the night. Always, a few times during the night, he would suddenly jump out of bed, run to the Sfarim shelf, open up a sefer, look something up, close it, put it back, and run back into bed. They would think that he's sleeping. Suddenly he would jump up again, look up a sefer, and it was like that throughout the night. They never were sure exactly when it was that he was sleeping. But nobody saw a night in his family that he went through an entire night sleeping without this happening. And one time he was very sick, and the doctor told his wife, he has to sleep. You can't let the Rav learn at night. You have to make sure that he sleeps through the night. He's not well. He needs sleep. He needs to get better. So she turned off all the lights in the house. So that way, and she didn't think he would know necessarily where the light switches were. And sure enough, he found the light switch when he needed it. He turned it on. She saw him that night. He was learning again. So the next night, she had to think of a different idea. So she turned off the electrical circuit in the apartment. She knew that for sure. He's not going to know where that is. So she turned off the electricity in the whole house. Even if you tried to turn on the switches, he wouldn't be able to. He wouldn't be able to learn. He'd have to go back to sleep. She wakes up in the middle of the night, and the bed next to her is empty. So she's wondering where he is, and it's pitch black in the house. She herself has to feel around, and she hears a little bit of noise coming from the laundry room. And she goes inside, and you know, by the washing machine, there's like a teeny, teeny little green or red light that's showing you if it's on or if it's off, a teeny light. And he was standing up right up against the washing machine with the safer up against the light, learning by it. That's how connected and loved that he was with the Torah. My son told me, I was asking Ben to tell me if he could think of any stories of a Melech and Torah, but the Gedolim, he said, well, he's good friends with Rav Nevin Saul's grandson. He's in his yeshiva with him. So Rav Nevin Saul's grandson told them once, when they were learning, he told them a story about his grandfather. He said that the Rebbetzin Nevin Saul once asked Rav Nevin Saul to put something in the mailbox, somewhere in the old city, to go to the mailbox and put it in. So he was walking and he was learning. He had a safer opener he was looking in. And they said that he got to the mailbox and he didn't want to take his head out of the Gemara. So he was feeling around for a while, like while he was learning, for the hole of the mailbox to stick the letter in. Instead of looking up, taking his head out of the Gemara to find the hole and put the letter right in, he couldn't peel his eyes out of the Gemara for that short amount of time. There's a famous story also with Rav Yashiv. Rav Yashiv also, unbelievable stories about his asmada and his focus and his constant learning. How one time it was after in the Eilat Yom Kippur, he ate something small, went to learn. And then he ended up learning straight through the entire night. He had stayed up the whole night of Yom Kippur. He was already over 100 at the time. He stayed up the whole night of Yom Kippur, and then he stayed up the whole night afterwards learning. And at one point, like later, towards the end of the night, his grandson came to him, who was watching him, and said, "Does the Rav want a cup of coffee?" He said, "I'm fleishiks," because he broke the fast on fleishiks. Fleishiks. Said the Rav ate like 8-9 hours ago. He said, "What? It's that time already?" He thought it was like an hour or two later. That the time just flew completely. It was completely oblivious to it. People that would go into Rav Yashiv to try to talk to him would stand in front of his face while he was sitting and he was learning. He wouldn't notice they were there. Some people tell stories for a few hours they stood there waiting till he even just noticed that they were standing there at the time that he was learning. So there was one time that Rav Yashiv was learning and the people were watching. There was a cat walking. He lives in Meir Sharon. So there was a cat walking on the table in his living room where he was learning, this small little table. And he was learning, and they saw him learning, and they saw him going like that. You know, like we would do like with a fly, maybe? With a fly we'd go crazy. But maybe with a fly, he didn't even know, it was something was getting on his gemara, he was pushing it away. There's my kids have unbelievable yichus. I married into that yichus. It's not my yichus. I have other yichus. But they have tremendous stories of great gedolim that are their great-great-grandparents, stuff like that. So one of them, I don't remember the name, Baron, I don't know, whatever it is. So there's a story about him. He was once learning. They lived in Meir Sharon, the old Meir Sharon 100 years ago. He was once learning, and someone put a hand on his gemara, asking for money. But he wanted to just quickly finish the piece that he was learning. And then he took out money, put it in the hand, and he noticed it's his own hand. His own hand. No, there was no poor person. Nobody was asking for money. It was his own hand that was there. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells about Rava, how there was a tzduki that saw Rava standing on his fingers, hard, And his fingers were being smushed and blood was pouring out of the sides of his fingers, the Gemara describes. And he was so entrenched in the sugya that he didn't notice that he's crushing his fingers and he's bleeding profusely. And the tzduki said to him, he screamed, he said, "You Jews, you're still acting the way you did in Har Sinai. You didn't think, you just did. You said, Nasa v'nishma. You don't think, you just do. You're learning the sugya, you're not even thinking, you're ruining your fingers." So you have to learn that Gemara and think, what exactly is the connection over there? But the idea of losing oneself completely in Avas HaTorah and jumping into it fully and without thinking it through, without planning it, just saying Nasa V'Nishma, that was a level of the Jewish people at the time of Har Sinai and way beyond that. And for sure it was completely irrelevant whether they got wet or they didn't get wet. They definitely would not have noticed the rain that was falling on them. There's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Ora Chaim that all Israeli kids could say by heart because they made a beautiful song out of it, and I really don't think you know it. But the Or HaChaim, but we should teach it to you, maybe we will. But the Or HaChaim is on Parshas Kisavo, where when you bring Bikurim, it says at the end of the Parsha Bikurim, you say, V'samachta b'chol ha'tov v'shem nosan l'cha Hashem elokechem. You should rejoice and be happy with kol ha'tov. So what's kol ha'tov? What's all this tov that Hashem gave to you that now you should rejoice with and enjoy? So the Or HaChaim over there says, ein tov ela Torah. He's quoting a Mishnah in Avos, ein tov ela Torah. And why is there no tov ela Torah? And now listen to this, these words. She'im hayu b'nei adam margishim b'mesikus v'arevos tova Torah. That if people would only feel the sweetness, they would be able to sense the sweetness and the pleasantness of the goodness of the Torah, if they really would be able to taste it, hayu mishtagim u'mitlatim acharei. They would become crazy, and they would become inflamed and addicted and running after it, not being able to separate themselves from it. V'lo yechashev be'enehem m'lo olam kesef azav. And nothing would be worth anything in the world to them. All the treasures and all the money in the world would, in their eyes, would be a zero. Wouldn't exist. It wouldn't matter. It would be worthless to them. Next to the tremendous desire and love, if they only would fully fathom and understand the taste of what the sweetness of Torah really is. Ki haTorah koleles kol hatovah shebaolam. Because in the Torah, it includes within it all the good that's within the world. If everything good that's in this world and everything that we enjoy comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Kodesh Baruch Hu is above all of it, and He gave us a Torah that encapsulates within it all the good, that everything good in this world only comes from the power of the goodness of the Torah. So one that fully tastes that goodness within the Torah itself, so he has everything in the world. He wouldn't be lacking anything, and nothing else would be worth anything to him. Imagine it like a blind person that doesn't have eyes. If we'd only be able to see, wow, it would be a whole different world. Imagine we're just missing certain taste buds. All of a sudden, we have those taste buds, and we can't imagine how good something could possibly taste. When a person really tastes what the Torah is, then they become like these stories that we're describing over here. Nothing else in the world exists other than the Torah that they're tasting right now. Okay, very nice. Great stories. And how do we get that? Where do we get a little bit of it? How do we build that flavor? How do we build that taste for the Torah? How do we get that kind of connection? So there's a mashal that I heard of. It was a wealthy family, and the father was afraid that his son was growing up too pampered. So he wanted to teach his kid like the value of making money on your own and working and making money. So he told his son, I want you to go out, son, and go make money today. Bring it home and show me that you made money. And the son was like, no way. This kid, he's used to the life. He has everything, all the comforts. He doesn't lift up work, sweat. Ask somebody for no way. So he went crying to his mother. And his mother, a wealthy lady too, she had rachmanis on him. And she said, okay, here's $100 bill. Put this in your pocket. Walk around. Go for a nice walk today. Come back tonight and show your father that you made $100. So he came home at night. He shows his father, here's $100. The father took it and ripped it up. And he said, tomorrow I want you to work and make money. So the son didn't know, he didn't say anything. He was like, what? How did Dad know that? And he went to his mother and said, I think Daddy knows something. He just ripped up the $100 bill. So she said, listen, your father doesn't have Ruach HaKodesh. I know your father. It must be that somebody saw you roaming around outside, and word got back to him that you weren't working. Tomorrow, go hide in such and such a place. Here's another $100. Spend the day. You could play all the games on your phone and stuff like that. And come back at night and you give him the $100. He won't hear any rumors that you're walking around. Comes back that night, gives his father $100. His father takes it, rips it up. He doesn't get what's going on. He goes back to his mother. He said, it happened again. Daddy ripped up the $100 bill. So she said, I don't know. I don't know how this is, but I don't have any other idea. Tomorrow you got to work and come back with the money. So the next day he walks around, finds him a job. Somebody lets him help in the pizza shop or somewhere the whole day. He's sweating. He's never sweat before. He's rushing around, running, taking orders. Comes, gets $100, comes back home at night, hands it to his dad. Dad, here's $100. His father takes it. He's about to rip it. And the son says, no. He's like, Dad, I worked for that. That was so hard. I sweat. I toiled. So the father smiles and said, now I know that you worked for it. The other $100 bills you felt no connection to. You didn't care. It was worth nothing to you because you didn't put any effort into it. But this, you worked for. And when you work for something, then you love it and you get connected to it. When we work for Torah, when we push for Torah, when we sit and we sacrifice for Torah, we don't just do it when it's convenient and when it's easy and when it's nice. We do it also when it's hard and also when we're tired and also when there's something else going on that we'd be enticed to be doing at that time. Instead, we push to do it. That is us investing in the Torah and building a connection to it. So we slowly will taste the sweetness and the value of Torah a little bit more, and get a little bit more addicted to it. In this week's parsha, I'm almost finished. It says, V'imbezos lo tishmu li v'halachtem imi b'keri v'halachti imachem b'chamas keri. If you walk with me, b'keri, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'll walk with you also b'keri. What does that mean to walk with Hashem b'keri? Keri means arai. Like, not kavua, not set, something like, by the way, like a secondary thing, not the most important thing to you. So then it should say, if you don't walk with me. Why does it say, if you walk with me, b'keri? It should say, and if you don't walk with me. What does it mean, if you walk with me, b'keri? So if Chaim Freelander explains, this isn't talking about something that's not walking with Hashem. This is talking about something that's learning and doing mitzvot, but it's secondary to him. It's second of importance. It's when it's convenient for him, when it works out for him, when it works with his schedule and there's nothing else conflicting that he would rather be doing, then he'll learn, then he'll do the chesed, then he'll do the mitzvah. So then Hashem says, so then I'll also go with you, Bekeri, when I want to help you. Sometimes I'll help you, sometimes I won't help you. Here and there I'll be there for you, here and there I won't be there for you. I'll treat you the way that you treat me. That's what Kodesh Baruch Hu says, Mida Kenegan Mida. You make Hashem a priority, a kvias, then you get that response in return. Bekvias, it's constantly Hashem always there. You treat Hashem as anything else that comes up that's interesting to me, I'll do. But if there is nothing else and it's all there is to do, then I'll do it. So then that's how he'll treat us back. I was thinking, what was so much harder in some ways about this incentive, the Shraga boxes maybe, than the other incentives? That what is harder about? If anything, it would seem we made it so easy. In the beginning, everybody was cheering and happy. You call it a scam, some of you. The guys that call it a scam usually have yeah, wait, come on. In the beginning, everybody was cheering. Why? Everything counts. You could read English books. It doesn't matter where you are. Shir counts. The rabbi's stories count. When the rabbi shmoozes with the shir, that could also count. Everything counts. It all counts. And wow. After all, like, you know, first it was counting dapim. Then it was only during breaks on Hanukkah. And then it was shraga workouts. If you learn a crazy number of hours straight, finally, pressure flesh, fresh air, we could just do it. So why is this one seem to be for many people a harder struggle than the other ones? And I think the reason behind it is that it's constant. It's not just like one chunk of time and then it'll be over. But it takes over your whole life. It's all the time. It's watching what you do all day long, every day, every hour. And that is very tedious, and that is very heavy, and that is a big burden. That's something that I have to always be in my game. I don't see the end in sight. It's not like, okay, it's 1 week of Hanukkah, and then it'll be over. It's 1 week of the Caleb thing, and then it'll be over. It's one workout, and then that workout will be over. I could take 2 days off, and then I could do another workout. Now it's different. Now it's all the time. I have to always be on top of it. I have to remember to record what I'm doing, and that's very hard. The Imbuk Hosai Teilechu, Teilechu is something that's constant. It's always going. It's constant. But Rashi says, Imbuk Hosai Teilechu is talking about a Melas in Torah. A Melas in Torah is something that goes with Halicha, with walking. That it's always going, it's always happening, and that's what's so hard about, and that's one of the things that's very hard in life. And the way that we build a connection to Torah learning is another thing that we have to work on, is our consistency, and our constantly doing it, and our plugging away and pushing, and hopefully we should zocha more and more to taste the sweetness of the Torah. And hopefully you'll come upstairs and hear some awesome stories. Sure.